Thank you so much. Praise team, praise band. Man, I just love to worship with all you folks and with the facilitation that this crew does. Thank you so much. So today, on this Easter Sunday, I welcome you to our study of famous last words. We've been looking at folks and the last things they said before leaving this earthly toil and soil, as we say. So far, it's been kind of an interesting look. We've looked at everybody from famous people like Martin Luther King Jr., biblical character, shepherds, and kings. And last week, we even looked at a criminal. But today, we come to perhaps the most famous of all famous last words, spoken by the greatest figure in all of history. Today, it won't surprise you at all that on this Easter Sunday, we look at the famous last words of Jesus and his triumphant shout from the cross, "It is finished." Now, the story is found in your Bible in the Gospel of John, chapter 19. You're very much invited to open your Bible there. If you have it on your phone, you're welcome to use your YouVersion or whatever version you use. John 19, I'm not going to be reading it. It is the story that we will be referring to, and it's where our key verse for today comes from, where Jesus cries out, "It is finished." But we'll be looking and referring to parts of the whole chapter. There's a fellow by the name of Joel Gregory, Dr. Joel Gregory. He is a former professor of preaching at Southwestern Seminary, where I attended. He's now at Truett Seminary and next to Baylor. And he was one of the great, is one of the great proclaimers of our time. A great preacher, has he's about this tall and has a voice bigger than a 10-gallon hat. I mean, it is just a giant voice, a very eloquent preacher. And he turned out to be our first pastor when Mary Beth and I got married 35 years ago this year. We were in Travis Avenue Baptist Church in Fort Worth, and Joel was our pastor. And so whether you know it or not, I don't always quote his name, but there are traits, there are mannerisms, there are phrases that I picked up from Dr. Gregory years ago. It's what every student of preachers does. And so I wanted to see what he had about today. So today, even more than usual, I'm indebted. I could hear his voice as I read several articles that he had written about Easter. And in particular, as I think about famous last words, Dr. Gregory, what he is known for is for putting together really big sentences full of big words. And so I love the way he says this guy. Listen to what he said about "it is finished." This is what he said. "This word," that's the way he says it, "this word is greater than any word of wisdom from any philosopher like Aristotle or Socrates or Descartes. Greater than any line of poetry or prose, regardless of rhyme or meter. This one word from the cross has inspired some and confounded others for centuries. It is finished, the one Greek word, tetelestai." Tetelestai, one word. Interesting, isn't it? One brief word. You might think Jesus has been ministering for some 3 years, right? I mean, he's been living this life on earth. He's got this great mission. He comes to the very, very end, and he gives a one-word summation. You know why? You know why brevity is absolutely appropriate here? Because when the work has been done, the talking's not necessary anymore. You just say, "Done. Finished, completed, mission accomplished." I know that's two words. Or you can take three, my favorite from New York, "We're done here." It's all done. It's finished. It's completed. It is behind us. And Jesus from the cross says one word, tetelestai. Do you remember Caesar's famous three-word summary of his life? Right? Bene, vidi, vici. Veni, vidi, vici, depends how you want to say it, but the Latin, the V has kind of a B sound. I came, right? Those of you who had history class, right? What? I came, I saw, I conquered. Now, let me tell you something. If you went from Rome to Egypt and around the rest of the world, you got a lot to say. If you conquered all of that world militarily, you could tell stories forever in a day. But that's not what he did, because he'd already done it. And because it was done, Caesar said, I came, I saw, I conquered. That's it. I know sometimes you guys wish your pastor could be that succinct. But when you accomplish the work that must be done, brevity is sufficient. Now, according to the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, you should take note of something. According to them, Jesus' famous last words from the cross, they were not whispered, they were not spoken humbly, they were not gasped out. According to them, every time they say he shouted, he cried out, I thirst. And they gave him a sop of vinegar on a sponge from the soldiers gathered at the foot of the cross. And that enabled him, I don't know, to clear his throat a bit, to moisten his tongue, his mouth, so that he could cry out in a mighty voice his one last word, tetelestai. It is finished, a shout of triumph. Now, I don't have any desire, having said that to you, to take away from the spiritual grandeur of that moment and that expression, but I want to ask you to do something a little more daily with me. I want you to look at some grammar with me. I want to do a little study here. I want us to understand what we're looking at. A closer grammatical look at this word, tetelestai. It is a third person singular verb. It means that Jesus was not talking about himself, but of something else when he said, it is finished. So we need to understand, what was it he was referring to by that pronoun, it? But what we do know is this. By the nature of the way Greek is spoken, he did not say, in the first person, he did not say, I am finished. That's not what he said. Because he wasn't, and he isn't finished. So Jesus did not say, I am finished. He said, it is finished. Jesus is using this amazing language of the day, the Koine Greek. It was a way of expressing the verbs in the Greek, especially in Koine. You have all these different aspects that we don't think about so much in English. You have tense and mood and all these things that have to do. But when you hear Jesus say tetelestai, he is using the perfect tense of it, the perfect expression of the verb. That don't mean it's perfect in the sense of perfection. Perfect is a way of describing what the verb is describing. And what does a perfect verb describe? It describes an act that has been perfectly completed and is done and is finished and has consequences moving forward. It will not be changed. It is a foundation which has been laid. You can't lay something else. The foundation has been laid. It is perfectly done by Christ. It can never be compromised. It cannot be changed. It's almost like if you put your foot in wet cement, right? And then you go away, you come back, it's hardened. It is the dickens to get that out of that, right? They got to break it up, completely remove it. It's as if when Jesus says it is finished, that it was chiseled into a type of eternal marble or granite that could never be effaced. It is finished. It's done. And it was spoken in what is referred to as the indicative mood. That's another grammatical term. What does that mean? It means, well, let's talk about what it doesn't mean. An indicative mood is to be used rather than a subjunctive. Everybody here know what the subjunctive is? If Jesus has said, it may be finished, that's a subjunctive. Yeah, that's not what he said. He said, it is finished. A subjunctive would be, it should be finished, should have been finished. Kind of reminds you of Black Jeopardy. Should be, but it's not. It's not that. No, and it shouldn't be here, you see. It is not what he meant. He meant something that was in the indicative. It is completely done and finished with certainty. It cannot be different from what he has spoken. Now, you're sitting there thinking, okay, I'm hoping he's about ready to move off this grammar. Not yet. Not yet. Because the grammar is still teaching us. And this final piece of it is kind of important. This verb, tetelestai, uses what we call a passive voice, which tells us that Jesus saw the work as being bigger than even just himself. The whole thing is finished. It is finished. Now, what's he talking about there? Jesus did not say, I finished it. He said, it is finished. Through the mighty deeds of Jesus on the cross, when he laid down his life for us, when he laid down his life, what we see in the cross is the culmination, the summary, all of it, the purposes and the mighty work of God of salvation. And you can go back now to the Old Testament and all those symbols, all those types, all those promises, the prophecies, the prophets, all those things that when you hear preachers preach from the Old Testament, they say, oh, pay attention here. This is a glimpse. This is a foretelling. This is a prophecy of the Christ who is to come and what God's going to do. And when Jesus dies on the cross, he's saying, it is finished. The saving work of God, all that is necessary for God's part to be done, is finished on the cross. One died for all time. Tetelestai. Jesus left nothing of his mission undone. He came and did what he was supposed to do. Lastly, before we leave this, I want to say a quick word about multiculturalism. Did you know that Jesus is multicultural? I mean, Jesus knew the scriptures, and what language were they written in? His scriptures, they were all written in Hebrew, because that's the language people spoke in the streets, right? No. At this point in history, Hebrew was not spoken in the streets anymore. Aramaic was the language. So Jesus is already into two languages. He speaks Hebrew because he quotes the scriptures often in their original. He speaks Aramaic because we see him many times quoted in the Bible, speaking in Aramaic. But Jesus also spoke Greek. It's not something that people make a big deal of, and people don't normally, people might say, well, Pastor, I'm not sure Jesus said tetelestai from the cross, because he might have spoken, you know, Aramaic. He did speak Aramaic in other places. It's very possible. It's possible. But you see, you remember Jesus, just before he goes to the cross, the last big event he was a part of was his trial. Who was he talking to at the trial? Pilate, the governor. Now, was he a Jew? No. He was from Rome. He represented Rome. What was the official language of Rome? Latin. So what's this Greek language everybody's speaking? Well, Koine Greek is the language of functionality. It's kind of like, that silly language many of us have learned, English. As you travel the world today, English is spoken so many places, right? It's the coin of the realm, verbally speaking. And in these days, Koine Greek was the language of the military, of the government, of the tax collector. That's always important. So you've got all this going on. So Pilate is before the crowd with Jesus. He's having a conversation with Jesus, and then he speaks to the crowd. Who do you want me to set free? Remember all that? You remember this story, right? Jesus is there. He says, are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus said, hey, man, it's what you said, not me. Do you think Pilate spoke Aramaic with Jesus? You think Pilate learned Hebrew? He was the governor assigned by Rome. Of course not. He was speaking Greek, and Jesus was answering him in Greek. And then Pilate turns to the crowd. And what language does he speak to the crowd? They all speak Aramaic mostly, but what does he speaks Greek, because that is his language. And this is the role he's playing. This is the trial. And everybody there understands Greek, because if you don't, it's a good way to get killed in Israel in this day. because you have to obey the commands from the soldiers. You have to obey the commands about paying taxes. So this is really important work to understand that all this is going on. So when I say Jesus spoke to Telestai from the cross, we're not 100% sure. He could have spoken in Aramaic. However, there are other places on the cross where he did speak in Aramaic, and when the gospel writers wrote it down, they wrote it in Aramaic. The most famous, some of you who are well-churched know this, when Jesus cried out, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, right? That's Aramaic. That meant, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Spoken in Aramaic, but he's quoting the Hebrew scriptures, Psalm 22. So Jesus is, even at these moments, it's amazing. He's trying, I think in many ways, he's showing us the gospel is for the whole world. When he said that phrase in Aramaic, there were people there who thought he was crying out for Elijah. They weren't multilingual, but he was. Not everybody, but he was. Very interesting to understand about who our God was. So it's very possible, I say all of that to say this, in spite of the fact that he was raised a Jew and knew the Hebrew scriptures, in spite of the fact that he was a Jew in what we call first century Palestine, and they spoke Aramaic, and he spoke Aramaic, he also spoke Greek, and it is quite possible he himself, not just the gospel writers, used the word tetelestai from the cross. Why? Because of the audience. Who's in the audience? Well, there's the crowd, the same crowd that Pilate had spoken to in Greek. There are the soldiers at the foot of the cross. There are dozens and people have gathered in the city. The city is overflowing with people. And Jesus, I think, cries out, it is finished, tetelestai. It was a very, very common word. Everyone pretty much, whether they spoke Greek or not, would understand tetelestai. Let me tell you why. Because in the first century, it was used for so many different things. If you were a farmer, even a Jewish farmer, and you had a sacrifice that you brought, your animal was so perfect. You know what they would say about a perfect animal that was good enough to qualify for a sacrifice? They would use the word tetelestai. This is the finished, this is the completed, this is the way it should be, tetelestai. It's a perfect example. When a carpenter finished building a piece of furniture and he got that just right, that last bit of sheen, that last bit of curvature, whatever it might be, and it was perfect the way he wanted, he would look at it and he would say, tetelestai, tetelestai. An artist painting their work on a canvas, get that last brush stroke on there, step back, they would say, tetelestai, it's finished, it's done, it's completed. A servant sent on a task by his master would go and do that thing, and having completed the task, would return to his master and say, tetelestai, it is finished, it is done. A runner, when he would run the race, and it was done and won, they would cross the tetelestai. It's finished. And then there's this other unique piece of history. In the 19th century, out in the dry, sandy areas of Egypt, I'm not sure what other areas there are of Egypt, but that in the dry, sandy areas, they made a great discovery. Archaeologists and scholars discovered a treasure trove of documents, papyri. That's the plural of the word papyrus. You know, they would take a reed plant and they would soak it and put chemicals in it and they would smash it out and make a form of what we would call paper, the earliest forms of what we would call paper, papyri. And usually they degenerate with time. But once they've been treated, if you keep them dry and cool, so they put them in these jars, they put them in these places, they save them, and sure enough, they find all of these documents. In the sands of Egypt. They'd never turned brittle. They had not faded. And they began to look through these pieces of old plant-soaked, smoothed-out kind of paper. And they began to discover that the same language, the same wordings that we often find in the New Testament were present in many of these documents. Very interesting, because up until that time, there were many scholars of the Bible who thought that it had been written in a special type of holy and sacred Greek. And it turns out that it was written in Koine Greek, which is what we would call street Greek, because it was spoken by people who spoke Greek around the world, kind of like English when you hear it around the world. It doesn't quite sound like what you hear in a literature class or in an English class here or in Great Britain. It sounds very different. And so they found all these documents, and you know what they found was quite interesting. They found a bunch of deeds of property. Makes sense, because you would want to keep deeds. They're valuable. They transfer property. They're so important. They would discover that at the end of the deed, what was required? A signature. Shocking. And then at the bottom of that, they would write a word. Guess what the word was? Tetelestai. It's finished. It's a done deal. The bill is settled. The property is changing hands. This was the language of the marketplace, and as they began to study, it was not just in deeds. They started finding it on receipts. Anybody here sign a credit card receipt in the past week? Same kind of deal. You sign, tetelestai. It's done. It's finished. No more adding stuff on there. No changing the deal. The deal is this deal, and it's done. And I love what Dr. Gregory said about it. Just completely blew my mind. He said, you know something, if you think about it this way, the 39 books of the Old Testament are like a giant document. All the foretelling of the one who would come from the very beginning when mankind falls into sin, and there's the prophecy of the one who will come, and he will crush the serpent, and he will save the people, and then the prophecies of the suffering servant, the Messiah who would come. All of that, he said, all of that is like a giant deed that God had prepared of what everything would go on before. And when Jesus came, and when Jesus fulfilled his mission, and when Jesus died on the cross, and when Jesus cried out to Tetelestai, it was as if he wrote his name, Jesus Christ, Messiah, Yeshua, I have done it, it's finished, and we're done here. There is nothing further to be added for the salvation of mankind. Now, our response comes later, but God's work is done. One sacrifice for all time. The debt is paid. Now, we need to ask the question, just what is it that's finished on the cross? When he says it's finished, well, you'll remember that Jesus, when asked to describe why he came, he said, the Son of Man has come to seek and save that which is lost. Everybody say, that's me. Yeah, raise your hand and say, that's me. Because the Bible says all of us were in that condition at one time or another. Whether we're saved now, whether we've been baptized now as a witness to what God has done, at one point we were all far from God. We were distanced from God, and we needed to be brought back. And he said, I came to seek and save and lay my life down as a ransom for many. It's a holy endeavor. It's what Christ came to do. So that work is being wrapped, that saving work. He laid down, he paid the ransom. That is finished. There's another way to see it too. His suffering is finished. I mean, he did cry out on the cross. We know that he suffered horribly. We know that when he was born, you remember when Mary ran into that weird guy at the temple, Simeon, and he said, you know, this that when he's pierced, you're going to be pierced. He told Mary, your heart's going to be pierced too. She knew from the beginning. This was not going to have a big happy ending without a lot of suffering in the middle. And Jesus knew, because you remember over and over again in his life and ministry, he would say, look, it's not time yet. How did he put it? My hour has not yet come. From the very first miracle he performed at Cana in Galilee when he turned water into wine at the wedding, he looked at his mother. He said, woman, mother, my time has not yet come. My hour is not yet come. And again throughout his ministry on this earth, for those 3 years he walked with the disciples, he would say, it's not yet time. Don't tell anybody what I've done. My hour has not yet come. My hour has not yet come. But now it has, and it's finished. Even though he had lived his whole life as a man, as it were, with a type of guillotine hanging over his head, he knew that he would have a suffering death. He spoke of the time that the bridegroom would be taken away, and the disciples, they would be saddened. For about 6 months before he died on the cross, Jesus had told them again and again, the Son of Man will go up to Jerusalem, be arrested, would suffer, and give his life. And they just did not like the sound of that. And folks, let's just be clear. The cross was not the only suffering that Jesus endured. It colored his whole life. Let me ask you this. Anybody in the room got a dental appointment on the calendar? Doctor's appointment? A few got surgery? I know you do. We've got church members who got surgeries coming up. So we put those dates on the calendar. How happy does that make you? Doesn't it feel like every day is just a little step closer to what I've got to suffer? Isn't that how we put it? Jesus, from the time he was a very young boy, knew he had to be about his Father's business. He knew the direction his life was headed. He carried that weight for a very long time. But when he gets to the cross, he understands that all of it, everything he's lived through, everything he suffered, everything he's done, everything that was in the Old Testament, all the prophets, all the prophecies, all the promises, all of that comes together on the cross, and it is done. Tetelestai. Tetelestai. We're done here. And just to remind ourselves, just what is finished when we say it is finished. Okay, so the ransom price, the atonement, the covering, all that had been anticipated with Jesus' death and his saving work on the cross, dying so that he could be the death of death. He would put an end to it. Dying so that we might have life. He died that we might not need to die again. It is finished. And his word was spoken to the Father. The mission you gave me is done. It is finished. I think in some ways, obviously, I think part of what he was saying was to the people, it's finished. The price has been paid for you. Not only to those who were there physically that day, but all of us who were in his mind and heart were there that day. It's finished. The saving work of Jesus is done for us. I don't want to read too much into this. This is guesswork on the part of Ed Williams, but I think in some ways when Jesus said it is finished, he was saying to all those angels, because he said he could have called 10,000 angels, right? That's the old gospel song. Well, we know he could have called angels down. We know the Bible makes it clear he had the power, but he didn't. Don't you know they were just, let me in there. I can't believe what's going on. Let me help. And he said, look, it's okay. It's finished. What had to be done is done. And as he cries out, Tetelestai, then a whole nother song begins that we see in the book of Revelation, right? Worthy, worthy is the Lamb that was slain. Every inhabitant of heaven then and every inhabitant that will ever be in heaven will sing the song, worthy is the Lamb, worthy is the Lamb that was slain. And I'm guessing here too, but I think Tetelestai was also shouted at that other guy. You know, the one who lives in the basement. Satan, the enemy, the devil. I have just the slightest inkling that when Jesus cried out, Tetelestai, it is finished, Satan's down in hell doing this. I don't want to hear that. No. Because he wants to deny it. He spent his whole life from the beginning of mankind as the serpent in the garden, and he is still at work today in our world. If you do not see it, you are not looking. And it's a battle that continues. But the big battle is finished. God's saving work is done, and all who will come to Christ can find that forgiveness. So that Satan, that one who did everything he could to stop the purposes of God, the one who urged Herod the Great to slaughter the innocents in Jerusalem, in Bethlehem, the one who spoke endless evil into the minds of humanity, the one who even in the garden tried to whisper to Jesus, don't do it, don't do it. And Jesus says, not my will, but thine be done, Father. And that gets us to this moment on the cross where Jesus says, it is finished, Tetelestai. I think part of that was directed towards the fella in the basement, as we say. So, and now we are finished here today. Because with the saving work of Christ finished, the vindicating resurrection of Jesus. You know, if Jesus had been buried in some unmarked tomb, some graveyard, if his body had returned to dust, we would have no assurance. But you heard 1 Corinthians 15 earlier today. If people say there is no resurrection, what that means, and what it does mean, because there is a resurrection, because Christ has conquered death. Emmanuel, God is with us. And I want to remind you that when Jesus gathered with those disciples in the upper room, he said, I'm going to go away. But in his teaching, he said, I'm going to send another, an advocate. I'm going to send the Holy Spirit, your helper. Now, if he had never come, if the Spirit had not been sent, then we would say, oh, I guess it didn't finish right. But it ended just the way he said. 50 days after this crucifixion, Jesus with the disciples at Pentecost, the Spirit came the sound of a rushing wind and tongues of fire. And the Spirit of God came, and that proved it is finished. Jesus has moved us into a new life. And so right down to this gathering today, with the other people sitting in this room with you, we remember together, it is finished. The fact that we gather here to worship, to honor, to obey, to recommit, to love Him and to love His people, people from every tribe and tongue and nation, it is an abiding reminder that the work is finished. And so I want to close with this word of resurrection celebration. I want to invite the praise team to come up. We're going to close with a couple of joyous songs together. But before we sing, I want you to hear this joyous declaration from Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. I love the language he uses here. Here's what the scriptures say. In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways. The Old Testament, the prophets, all that stuff we talked about. But in these last days, He has spoken to us by His Son. There's nobody needed after Jesus, brothers and sisters, only Jesus. He was spoken to us by His Son, whom He appointed heir of all things, and through whom He also made the universe. The Son, Jesus Christ, is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of His being. If you want to know what God is like, take a long look at Jesus. That's what He is. He is the exact representation of His self, of His being. Sustaining all things by His powerful word. And after He, Jesus, had provided purification for sins on the cross, He, that is Jesus, look at this, you see this? He sat down. Why? Why do you sit down? Because the work is done. It is finished, tetelestai. Let us rejoice. Christ is risen. Christ is risen indeed. Let's try that with everybody involved. Christ is risen. Christ is risen indeed. Amen. Let's stand together and sing in worship and celebration.